Well, this summer I decided to do a sermon series on texts from our scriptural tradition that speak to us, cajole us, invite us, implore us, command us, plead with us, annoy us, and enlighten us about justice. In a recent article entitled, "What is Biblical Justice?" Tim Keller, who is the pastor of Redeemer Church in New York City, writes about two words for justice in the Hebrew Scriptures, and they are mishpat and tzedakah. Mishpat, tzedakah. Mishpat, Keller explains, has to do with correct judgments, giving people what they deserve. It's kind of like a court of law, giving people what is due them. And this word appears a couple of hundred times in the Bible, in the Old Testament, and 40 times in the book of Isaiah alone. So here's the first instance of this use of the word mishpat. Learn to do good, seek mishpat, seek justice, reprove the ruthless, defend the orphan, plead for the widow. Now, there are times in which the author calls out the government for not doing mishpat, such as Isaiah 3:14. The Lord enters into judgment with the elders and the princes of God's people. It's you who have devoured the vineyard. The plunder of the poor is in your houses. In this case, the judges are being judged. Those who are responsible for doing mishpat, justice, giving people what is due, are not doing so. And they have instead plundered the poor. Then the prophet speaks of one who will come to execute justice. This is Isaiah 16:5. A throne will be established in loving kindness, and a judge will sit on it in faithfulness in the tent of David. Moreover, he will seek justice and be prompt in righteousness. So when early Christians were looking into the texts of the Hebrew Scriptures to explain their experience with the social revolutionary Jesus and the whole Jesus movement, they found in Isaiah this concept of mishpat, justice, and then associated it with Jesus. We sing about it at Christmas time. Here's Isaiah 42:1 through 4. Behold my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom my soul delights. I've put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not be disheartened or crushed until he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands will wait expectantly for his law. For the sake of inclusion and gender equity, or gender mishpat, I'm going to read that passage again with a different pronoun. Behold my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon her. She will bring forth justice to the nations. A bruised reed she will not break, and a dimly burning wick she will not extinguish. She will faithfully bring forth justice. She will not be disheartened or crushed until she has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands will wait expectantly for her law. Throughout Isaiah, there is this existential grief and longing for mishpat, for justice in a world in which it's fleeting and rare. In Isaiah 49:4, the speaker hopes for justice from God when she cannot find it in human relationships. I said, I've toiled in vain. I've spent my strength for nothing in vanity. Yet surely the justice due to me is with the Lord and my reward with my God. And I like the use of this metaphor. All of us growl like bears and moan sadly like doves. We hope for justice, but there is none. For salvation, but it's far from us. That may be the feeling we might have this morning as yet again the news tells us of more violence, this time in Baton Rouge, over the weekend in France and elsewhere. And finally, the author's frustrated with what we call religious ritual that's empty of justice and even is counter to justice. And this verse is the final use of the word mishpat in Isaiah 61:8. For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery in the burnt offering, and I will faithfully give them the recompense and make an everlasting covenant with them. Now, scholars have understood verses like this as signs of what philosopher Carl Jaspers called the Axial Age. It's a period in human history, Jaspers said, from about the 8th century BC to about the 3rd century BC that marked a cultural shift all around the world. According to Jaspers, the spiritual foundations of humanity were laid simultaneously and independently in China, India, Persia, Judea, and Greece. And these are the foundations upon which humanity still subsists today. So ideas of justice, compassion, human meaning were developed in this period. And this is from Carl Jaspers' Origin of Goal in History. Confucius and Lao Tzu were living in China. All the schools of Chinese philosophy came into being, including those of Moti, Chuangzi, Li Tzu, and a host of others. India produced the Upanishads and Buddha, and, like China, ran the whole gamut of philosophical possibilities down to materialism, skepticism, and nihilism. In Iran, Zarathustra taught a challenging view of the world as a struggle between good and evil. In Palestine, the prophets made their appearance from Elijah by way of Isaiah and Jeremiah to Deutero-Isaiah. Greece witnessed the appearance of Homer, of the philosophers, Parmenides, Heraclitus, and Plato, of the tragedians, of Thucydides and Archimedes. Everything implied by these names developed during these few centuries almost simultaneously in China and India and the West. Now, Jaspers isn't without his critics. There are people who say he generalizes too much, but nonetheless, we see a shift, it seems, from a religion as sacrificing animals to the gods in order for the gods to make it rain or whatever, or provide favor to the person, to the inclusion of social justice as an aspect of religion itself. So to put it in very simple terms, for Isaiah and the Axial Age prophets all around the world, it wasn't enough to get right with God. We needed to get right with one another. And it's this getting right that is mishpat, or justice. The prophet Amos put it glaringly clear as this author speaks for God. I hate, I despise your religious festivals. Your assemblies are a stench to me. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your harps. But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-falling stream. So mishpat, or justice, refers to correct judgment, giving people what is due, with a special concern for the poor, the widows, the orphans, the naked, those most vulnerable. Now there's another word for justice in the Hebrew Scriptures, often translated as righteousness, and this is tzedakah. And it's similar to mishpat, a synonym in some ways. In fact, often they're put in parallelism in the poetry of the Hebrew Scriptures. This is Isaiah 5:7. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel and the people of Judah, God's delightful plant. Thus God looked for justice, but behold bloodshed. For righteousness, but behold a cry of distress. And those are the two words, justice, mishpat, righteousness, tzedakah. That's often how they're translated in English in the Bible. Tzedakah is slightly different. It's more of a personal quality of being just. Again, Tim Keller of the Redeemer Church in New York, who I referenced earlier, wrote that tzedakah is a life of right relationships. So it's not so much the action of justice, but the character of one's person or the character of an entire society, as this character is seen through right relationships. Isaiah 1:26. Then I will restore your judges as the first and your counselors as at the beginning. After that, you'll be called the city of tzedek, the city of righteousness, a faithful city. Okay. So what did I do here? All I did is provide a quick setup for the sermon series for this summer with a brief study of two words in Hebrew that we find again and again, mishpat tzedakah, words translated often as justice and righteousness. You can do this word study yourself. It's all online. So while you're waiting for the Pokemon, you can just look up justice and righteousness in the Bible and then find them cross-referenced and defined. BibleStudy.com. Oh, BibleStudyTools.com. That's a website. Or a Remus Bible browser. You look up justice, you find the occurrences, you read the passages, you compare and contrast. Voila, you are a biblical scholar. So what I'm just going to do, that's all I do. What I'm going to do this summer is hopefully point out that the Bible talks a lot about justice, and in many complex and interesting ways. For instance, I Googled homelessness and Bible, and I pulled out today's scripture reading from my magical internet hat. Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover him and not to hide yourself from your own flesh. Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness, tzedakah, your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Now here's my contemporary paraphrase of this passage. I would say that Isaiah is saying this is what real religion is about. Now if you don't like the word religion, then this is what it means to be spiritual. And if spiritual is just too woo-woo for you, then this is what it means to be a decent human being. It's not about yoga or meditating or praying or going to church or finding God on the golf course or feeling bad about yourself or believing and reciting theological doctrines. Here's real religion, real spirituality, the real thing. One, stop oppressing people and instead help people find freedom and happiness. Two, make sure hungry people have food. Three, see that the homeless people have homes. Four, give the vulnerable protection, clothe the naked. Five, don't avert your eyes or hide from your own people. And everyone is your own people, your own flesh, anyone with bodies. And then what'll happen? You'll find enlightenment, man. You'll find your own healing. You'll experience tzedakah, right relationship within your own character, and God will have your back. That's my paraphrase. I encourage you to make your own. So here we are, a medium-sized congregation in the suburbs of Portland. What might this passage mean for us? Well, this is a congregation that does the real religion thing, this righteousness justice thing. We want to do the thing. And even while doing the thing seems overwhelming and confusing and maybe a little uncomfortable, perhaps a little scary, nevertheless, we get it. And housing justice is one of the things that's been bubbling for some time. Long before I was here, we've been talking about it. As housing prices and rental prices rise, as the numbers of visible homeless and invisible homeless increase, we are increasingly realizing that housing justice is an invitation. It's a big thing, and it's complicated. And our first temptation, as being smart folks, is to try to think our way through it. And what I mean is that we see, for example, the article in the Oregonian, I saw it yesterday, about the homeless living in tents on the Springwater Corridor in southeast Portland. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales has announced plans to clean up the area that's in the Portland city limits. Clean up is an interesting word choice. You clean stuff that's dirty. You clean up trash and you throw it away, wherever away is. There is no such thing, by the way, as away. For those who live in houses in the neighborhood of these camps and those who use the trails for recreation, these camps are dirty and they need cleaning. For those who live in the camps, for whom these tents are home, clean up means destroy, uproot, cast away, reject. These human beings, our own flesh, are literally being treated like trash. If powers larger than I were to come to my neighborhood and say, you know, these houses really need to be cleaned up, and they aren't talking about vacuum cleaners, but bulldozers, and you have 3 days to get out, cleanup would have a whole different meaning for me. Now, I am not criticizing the mayor or the neighbors or trying to throw Bible verses at a problem. What I want to avoid is the temptation to try to think our way out of this. I have no grand solution, and I'm doubtful that anyone else has one either. And even if they did, so what? It's all talk. Thinking and talking. But meanwhile, just outside my neighborhood, on the boundary, new houses are being built with price tags of about $650,000. Now, our own flesh, living in Springwater Corridor, in tents, won't likely be moving into those houses. And as the system works, that's considered normal. It's what cities do. Is it, though, as it says in Isaiah 1:26, a city of tzedakah, or righteousness? This is the phrase that haunts me from today's reading from Isaiah 58. Don't hide yourself from your own flesh. Don't hide yourself from your own flesh. The challenge is not for us to think our way of a grand solution for everybody else or tell the mayor what to do. The challenge is don't hide. Now, a proposal has been brought to us and to the session, and the session in response has commissioned a team to explore the feasibility of taking a little baby step as a congregation, and that is to explore an organization called Family Promise. That phrase, bring the homeless poor into your house, our house being the church building, is perhaps the opportunity. I'm not going to get into the details of Family Promise, because we're going to have a little church chat about it today after the service, so you're all invited to come and check this out. But I hope we will continue that conversation and continue to have more conversations over the coming weeks about the ins and outs of this possible program and whether or not it is feasible for us as a congregation, and to ask hard questions about it and about our involvement. But in short, Family Promise is a cooperative effort between congregations to temporarily house families for a week at a time. They're all carefully screened and whatnot. And then they work toward finding a more suitable housing and employment if needed. Is this the grand solution to the Springwater Corridor camps? Of course not. I don't know if it's a solution to anything. It is, however, a first step toward not hiding from our own flesh. It's something we can probably do that helps us connect with our own flesh that has this faceless and fleshless term, homeless or houseless. Sometimes as we're faced with the problems that are far larger than we can solve, we just have to start where we are. We can't repair the world, but we can take steps toward repairing the world. We can't bring about justice, but we can continue to take steps toward being just. Amen.